In the months after the Pearl Harbor attack in December 1941, all the momentum in the Pacific War belonged to the Japanese. America has never seemed as vulnerable, both in Hawaii and on its mainland western borders. The Battle of Midway in the early days of June 1942 changed all that. Author Jonathan Parshall has a lifelong interest in the Imperial Japanese Navy, and his book, Shattered Sword, The Untold Story of the Battle of Midway, looks at that pivotal conflict from the Japanese side. He's coming to an upcoming symposium at the Pacific Aviation Museum, Pearl Harbor, to mark the anniversary of the battle, and we spoke the other day about its importance.
I think you have to be careful about how you use the word decisive in a war as big as World War II, but yeah. I think it is certainly the most important naval battle in the Pacific War, mostly because of its downstream effects. It sets us up for the campaign at Guadalcanal, which, you know, could never have taken place without Midway.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly think it's, you know, the single most important naval battle in the entire war. But whether or not, you know, it's an actual turning point or not, that's more debatable, perhaps.
Well, let's say, what was the state of, you know, where were we in the Pacific War prior to Midway?
Well, and that's a really great question. Obviously, the middle of 1942 are very dark days for America and for the Allies as a whole. You know, the way the war has been going thus far in the Pacific has just been horrible for us. So to be able to sort of terminate what had seemed like an unbroken run of Japanese victories and to turn that momentum around was absolutely huge from a morale standpoint at that point in the war.
We were really knocked back on our heels by Pearl Harbor, weren't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, the next few months are nothing but, you know, piling misery on top of that. You know, there had been a disastrous campaign in the Philippines that had resulted in the loss of the entire garrison there.
Yeah.
The Japanese have run wild through the Pacific. The British have been absolutely humiliated in Malaya and Burma.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, things are looking very, very bad for us all throughout the Pacific. So, again, to be able to sort of turn things around, get a little breathing room, and to begin to be able to contemplate undertaking a counteroffensive of our own, that's a huge game changer for us.
For the Japanese Imperial Navy and for the Japanese armed forces in general that are basically, as you described, basically had driven all before them. From the start of the Pacific conflict. Did that lead to overconfidence on their part?
I think there was certainly an element of overconfidence there. But there was also a sense of urgency, certainly amongst some of the top military leadership like Yamamoto, who knew that, you know, in the long term, America is just vastly more powerful than Japan. And if they were going to bring this thing to some sort of a successful conclusion, they had to do it sometime in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
So they were driving very, very hard and driving, you could argue, in too many directions at once. You mate that with a sense of overconfidence in the rank and file, and what you end up with is a battle plan at Midway where you're putting, frankly, too few resources out at the tip of the spear, and that allows us to fight a battle at Midway that's actually pretty evenly matched right off the island itself.
Mm-hmm. The loss of those carriers, the Japanese lost an essential component of their fighting capability at Midway, didn't they?
Absolutely. The Japanese started the war with 6 large aircraft carriers and about 5 smaller ones, but the real workhorses were their 6 fleet carriers. And to lose 4 of those in an afternoon, it's a devastating blow. And really, their carrier force was the finest in the world at that point, and really sort of represented a trump card, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And to throw that away, that early in the conflict, given the scale of America's shipbuilding program, they were never going to be able to get that trump card back once it was wasted.
This is Admiral Yamamoto's famous warning, right? That this that the Japanese would awaken a sleeping giant. Because
that phrase is actually apocryphal, as it turns out.
Is that right?
As far as we can tell, is the product of an extremely skilled screenwriter for Tora, Tora, Tora. So,
got me.
There's no question that Yamamoto knew, you know, what the odds were in this war,
mm-hmm.
And was certainly cognizant of the fact that in the long term he was not going to have a good run if the war continued very long.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just shows you how popular culture intrudes upon history. But
yes,
it was your task to sift through that, wasn't it, in your book?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the sort of interesting pieces of our book was coming at it more from the Japanese perspective, which had never really been done in any detail.
Yeah.
And it pointed out a number of myths that have come down to us on the Japanese side. And it's funny you should mention that line from Tora, 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 because the gentleman that perhaps told more tall war stories on the Japanese side was none other than Mitsuo Fuchida, who was the attack leader at Pearl Harbor as well.
Uh-huh.
And he is actually the gentleman who gives us the myth around the fuel tanks, the missed, you know, hypothetical missed opportunity to bomb the fuel tanks at Pearl Harbor,
uh-huh.
Which we, you know, have had ingrained in our popular memory ever since since Tora 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 came out. And he also tells some war stories about Midway as well, probably the most famous being that at the time of the climactic dive bomber attack against the Japanese carriers, they were supposedly just minutes away from launching their own counterattack against our carriers. But when Tony and I, my co-author, dug through the Japanese air group records, what you become aware of is that in actuality the Japanese were probably a good half an hour or more away from being able to launch their own counterattack. They were caught absolutely flat-footed.
So that is accurate, that we did catch them napping. How much of a part did luck play in all this?
I think it played a huge role in the battle. You know, and it's sometimes difficult to sift between good luck and good command decisions. I mean, we were fortunate to have some very smart guys up in the air in command of some of our squadrons. But for Enterprise's two dive bombing squadrons to get into position, for instance, they have to be lucky enough to run across a Japanese destroyer that is hustling back to the main carrier force after having held one of our submarines down for a couple of hours.
Uh-huh.
You know, if we hadn't run across that ship and followed it home, you know, who knows? Are we in a position to deliver that attack and do it in a coordinated fashion with the aircraft from Yorktown that were showing up at the same time? So there are all sorts of instances throughout the battle of good and bad luck on both sides.
Could we have had things gone a little differently? Could we have taken a pretty serious beating at Midway?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I would say that if you look at Admiral Nimitz, who was the supreme commander back in Hawaii, who was kind of calling the shots, when he gave his orders to his two main admirals, Admiral Fletcher and Admiral Spruance, he made it very clear to them that this was not the sort of battle that they were to prosecute down to the last rowboat. You know, if worse came to worse and they found themselves in a pickle, they were to preserve their carriers if possible and, you know, let the Marines fend for themselves if need be. So I think we were in a better position to, if things had gone against us, to sort of, you know, scoot on out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Japanese, when they were placed in a bad situation, they lost three aircraft carriers bombed early in the morning, and then they got one carrier left to hear you. An American commander, I think, would have counterattacked, but also would have been edging towards the exit so that when the time came, you know, you could run for it. The Japanese did not do that, though, and they ended up wasting their fourth carrier to really no real good value.
Because, the mode we were in was preserving a pretty damaged fleet to fight again another day, yeah?
Yeah, well, and we know, too, that, you know, the shipyards are a-humming back in the United States, and really all we need to do is kind of hang on in the Pacific for a certain amount of time before that largesse is going to begin to materialize in the Pacific. Nevertheless, you know, people like Nimitz and his boss, Admiral King, were extremely aggressive. And you look at the aftermath of the Battle of Midway, well, we win this thing. And then we turn around and counterattack the Japanese within 2 months at Guadalcanal. That's pretty breathtaking from an aggressiveness standpoint.
Jonathan Barshall is the co-author of Shattered Sword, The Untold Story of the Battle of Midway. He'll take part in a two-day symposium at the Pacific Aviation Museum, Pearl Harbor, on May 31st and June 1st. That'll mark the 75th anniversary of that battle. The symposium is free with registration, and you can get details on our Facebook page, The Conversation.